Hello. That was a good start.
You know what? It's a good start until you said that's a good start.
Hello, and welcome to the Good, the Bad, and the Better Than Average podcast. I'm Alice.
No, I'm Brian.
And today's episode, we're talking about animation. Yes. And that's a very broad subject. So we're just going to pick a few of like our like likes and dislikes in animation and just why we like them, etc, etc.
All that good stuff.
All that great, great stuff.
And just be ready for us to destroy your childhood.
Completely. Completely.
Also, I apologise for The Little Mermaid because I butchered that story.
Oh, in the last episode?
Yeah.
What was it? Oh, the damsel thing.
Yeah, because yeah. I said, oh, she's not that much of a damsel. And then I watched the last battle with her and Ursula and I was like,
oh, she's totally a damsel.
Prince Eric kind of saved her there.
I generally thought when you said I thought you meant like, oh, as like a character, she's not too much. But she is a little bit.
Well, even like the song Part of Your World, it's a bit damsely, isn't it? Because she's like, oh, I just want to be out there. I just want to be free with everything.
But she's probably the only the first princess to really express that. Oh, I just want.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a man. I just want to have legs.
Yeah, I think that.
And sometimes I agree. I'm like, I want nice legs.
But you're like, I want to be a mermaid as well.
Oh, no, I do want to be a mermaid. Brian, nice. I do want to be a mermaid. I'm in the bath constantly. Every time I message you, you're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm in the bath. Like
splashing your legs together.
Literally. All I do is just like, thrash.
I'm a mermaid.
I'm a mermaid, I promise. I've got a fish tattooed on me and everything. Like.
So you're already like, well, maybe a lot of fifth there. Maybe like a percent there.
What?
You're like a percent there.
Oh yeah, 1% mermaid.
1% mermaid because of my fish tattoo.
Because I'm just like flashing it to everyone. No, look at my fish tattoo, I'm a mermaid.
Look at my legs.
And everyone's like, okay, psycho. Okay, psycho. Alright, so, animation. What would you say is your nowadays favourite animation, I'd say, like, now, as an adult?
As an adult?
As an adult male.
I have a lot of love for a lot of the old... like animated superhero stuff, like
of course, yeah,
the old Spider-Man, the old X-Men.
Love them.
Probably the best out of those is the Batman animated series, because that was
mate. That is beautiful. Good. That is good at any. Not when people say, "Oh, it's a kids show." I'm like, it's not a kids show. Not. It's a way of life. It's.
Have you seen?
You don't understand the commitment I have to the Batman animated series.
Well, that's the thing. I think because there's one episode in particular that it was like. It really showed me how smart the show could be, and it was the episode where it's all the villains around the poker table, and they're all talking about how they bested the Batman one time. They're like, I did this, and
yeah.
Cross,
I know
like,
the one you're talking about, yeah.
I hit him with a rock. Fair enough, good
enough. That's fair, that's fair.
It's such a good setting story, because then they're like trying to all top the Batman, and then right at the end, the Batman's like, yeah, I've been here the entire time.
Yeah, mate, I've just been here.
It's
love it.
So good. There's obviously a couple of classics like SpongeBob and Fairly Odd Parents and a lot of stuff like that. The first animated film I got into is definitely a film that wasn't supposed to be for me. But I think my parents were like, oh yeah, that's got cartoons on it, that'll be fine. But it's South Park's movie.
Oh my god, no! I knew you were going to say that.
Hey, it's so good. If you haven't watched it.
Is that the Wooden Creature one where they all have sex in the woods?
No. It's the musical movie.
Oh, that one! I forgot about that one.
Really old one. Which that's
old. I haven't seen that in years.
The first section I love because the opening song is partly influenced off Belle from Beauty and the Beast, like the very first song of her.
Do you know what? That's parodied a lot. That is used for a lot of bases of parodies of like wandering through a village and being like. Oh, I'm the princess, and like it's very the way
sections.
She moves across, and yeah, that's used a lot. Completely,
I can imagine because this is a good like introduction to the general premise of what the show is going to be like.
Yeah,
like South Park do it so perfectly. We'll have to. I'll actually put it on later on. But what about you? What was your first or favorite animation that really got you into it?
Oh god, there's so many. Well, obviously last week I spoke about The Little Mermaid briefly. That was when I was very young and I started getting into drawing. But oh, there's so many. I really love Treasure Planet, and I know that's technically a flop in Disney. Oh, but I love. You can just tell about the passion that people put into it. I love it.
It looks gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Incredible. And the characters are fun and memorable. And
I really loved it. It was also like the first kind of Disney film I saw which really had like a father son esque relationship with Jim and Silver, but also it's also complicated as well. Like it wasn't like, oh, he's a little bit bad, but they get on. Like it was really like complicated because it got to a point where Silver had to really choose between Treasure or Jim. Mm. And Silver's inherently like he's not evil, but he's not a good guy. And they don't even try to make him the good guy at the end. He's just a guy, and he's just trying to get by. And it has all these like really deep conversations between him and Jim, and you can tell that Silver sees something in Jim that is very similar to him, and I think that's how their bond kind of started.
Yeah.
And I just think it's done so well, and they used montage really well in it with is it the Goo Goo Dolls or Go-Go Dolls? Goo Goo Dolls.
I don't know. I think it was the Goo Goo Dolls. Yeah. I think you told me it was the Goo Goo Dolls. But I never know. Oh, it sounds like this sort of band.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah. Their song, I'm Still Here. Mm. It's just used so well.
Yeah. Well, it's another good... I find that happens a lot where it's like it's a coming of age montage where they're like, this is how this character's now living with these other people.
Yeah, and then it has flashbacks to him as a kid and he's just obviously not very close with his dad.
Yeah, which also helps the whole father-son relationship.
It's a really quick way to get someone like to understand why Jim's the way he is because he's a dick in it. He's a problem teenage boy that gets in trouble. It's done in like an alien-esque way with the floating skateboard and the robot police, but you can so see it in the kind of kid he will be in an American high school. Like he's a skateboarder, keeps getting trouble, getting kicked out of class, he smokes at the bike sheds at the school, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, the cut above his cheek.
Yeah, the cut on his cheek.
Which disappears at the end. So.
No, they kept changing cheeks. Oh, this was an
The
animator in me was just like, oh my god, I can't handle this. They kept changing cheeks.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, no, you don't notice it and then watch it again. Every single time it kept changing.
Do you reckon that was
I think they added it in last minute.
Okay, I was going to say, was that easier thing or was that just someone being like, fuck it, the film's already done.
Do you know what? I think it is definitely because animation is not done just by one person or two people. Yeah. People take on characters as a lot... The way they organise it is a team of animators will take on a character and they will animate that character. So I mentioned like last week about Glenn Keane taking on Ariel. That was his character. He animated Ariel and he animated Beast and Beauty and the Beast. So I think what happened was they had in-betweeners. Like they were usually like younger people who were trying to get into animation. They tend to be in-betweeners. So they did all the drawings in between big scenes.
Yeah.
So they do all the movement drawings. But I think what happened is that they sometimes, with Jim, had to pass it on to another animator and they didn't look at previous already done footage of him.
Mm.
So they didn't check where his scar was.
So they're just like, oh yeah, that guy looks like this.
Which is why you need a turnover sheet for a character, which is like showing every angle possible for a character. And you give that to an animator and being like, make sure every detail's right. But something like a scar changing, you never notice it. It's the same with Pocahontas with her eyebrows. They wiggle a lot. You don't notice it until someone points it out and ruins your life. Yeah. Sorry.
And the movie's like... Sorry. But I was actually looking up a little bit of research on it because I saw that Glenn Keane is actually the guy who animated a lot of Treasure Planet or was at least one of the main animators.
I think he did some of it. Yeah, he did a little bit. I'm not sure what aspect. So sometimes they just get animators to come in and, like, for example... Tim Burton did the animation for Vixie in Fox and Hound.
Really?
Mm, he was starting out.
That was really weird.
That's such an old film. And Tim Burton did Vixie.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that.
He didn't lead it, but he did a bit of the animation for her. And he did... apparently, he said when he did the far away shots of her, he did them first. And he only started doing close-up shots of her when he started to like the character.
Because
he was like, I'm not really sure how I feel about her yet. So he just did the far away shots of her just being a fox. And obviously, close-ups is showing a bit more of the emotion and, like...
Yeah, obviously.
Making it almost human-esque in the way they show emotion, because animals can't really show emotion like humans do, not in the same way, facially. So he did it when he started to draw her up close when he started to like her more. But yeah, Tim Burton, when he's in his early career days, helped out on Fox and the Hound.
And then he done loads of acid and realised, I like dark stuff. I want to make it creepy.
And then he wanted to draw zombies and...
Johnny, Helen, get over here.
Johnny, Helen, skipping down the road.
I've got it. And then post like a skeleton picture.
Can you imagine Tim Burton on the little teenage kid, like just getting into the career in the team of Fox and Hound? And then they all saying the lovely ideas about the Fox and Hound. It'll be autumn themed, be lovely bunnies and foxes. And it's going to be sad bit. It's going to be a bit of everyone stop that. And then I can imagine Tim Burton's hand and being like, what if they were dead?
Yeah, it's like, it's a little light, don't you think? Could be darker.
What about if their eyes fall out halfway through? Tim, sit down.
Do I have to draw a cat face or can I make it a skeleton? But I do love Tim Burton. He's
an interesting character, and I think he, obviously, his style works for him.
Yeah.
And you know how I feel about Tim Burton. He's not my favourite.
And it inspired a lot of like creepy, weird animated films like Coraline and stuff. I love Coraline.
Yeah, no.
I love Coraline.
I love the story is interesting, but oh my god, I can't look at it without actually wanting to be sick. it's well done, and the designs are. In theory, really gorgeous and really stunning piece of animation. So much work has been put into it, but I can't look at it.
Just creeps you out too much.
It creeps me out. And I was one of those people in my animation class where anything like that was shown, I couldn't look at it. And everyone's probably thinking, this animator's not very good at what she does if she can't look at this animation or appreciate it. I'm like, I do appreciate it, but...
But your heart's more for the 2D animation.
I love 2D. I'm a sucker for it. I love it.
I think, well, part of that as well is since you grew up with loads of just straight Disney films.
Yeah.
A lot of them are just...
A lot of the independent, like, bad animation films. Like, we were talking about it earlier, The Brave Little Toaster and...
Oh, yeah. All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yeah. Ferngully.
They're weird.
I love them. They're terrible.
Yeah. Well, I think they do the job of parodying Disney. Because if you look at All Dogs Go to Heaven, it's actually like a musical and it has terrible songs. And I'm just like, why?
Oh, yeah, it's a musical, isn't it?
It's like they had to throw in every like Disney niche just to fit the bill.
Cats Don't Dance. Do you remember that one?
I don't think so. What? Cats Don't Dance?
Cats Don't Dance. It's like, I feel like you might like this film. It's like a cat. And he's like, it's based in like the world that all the cat, all the animal characters are like humans. They have jobs, kind of like Zootropolis. They have jobs and
okay.
And he wants to be a dancer or something, or he wants to be in Hollywood. So he goes to like Hollywood, and he tries to get into it. And he meets a girl, and is he put on a play? I don't know.
So that sounds strange. It's like
the animation is actually really, really slick and great. It's a really good example of a good like 2D animation.
Mm.
It's just the story is not quite.
Not quite there. Well, quite there. They're probably working on that whole Disney thing where they were starting to, like, make animal-human characters so you could...
They definitely had a phase when they're, like, Robin Hood is a really good example of that, having them as
foxes and...
Foxes and bears animals. And lions being people in it and representing real people. I loved it.
Or even just, like, the simple ones, like Lady and the Tramp, where it is generally a story about two dogs.
Yeah.
Anything else, and then they're still living normal.
Like, there's two different types of animal animation in Disney. The animals are the people, or there is animals and people. Mm. Like, Fox and the Hound is just told in the perspective of the animal.
Yeah.
Or there is animals are people. The Zootropolis, they're being people. They have jobs and they have clothes and yeah.
It's very strange.
It's so weird. I remember I was studying like the kind of idea of like using humans as like a way to animate animals. This was years ago. But I think that's why I think I spoke to you about this about Lion King, the remake of the Lion King.
Yeah.
And why I didn't think it worked because there is no. The reason why we got so attached to the original Lion King is because they're characters, they're animals, but we have empathy with them because we're recognising human facial reactions.
They actually elicit emotions.
Yeah, they elicit emotions that humans would. So that's how we have empathy with these characters. That's why when Simba's dad dies, it's the most heartbreaking thing. And why you laugh when Timon rolls his eyes at Pumbaa and... Do you know what I mean?
Hmm.
And why Scar is really terrifying because his face is d- He looks evil. He's pulling a face, but then they try to make it look really realistic. It loses all that magic completely because they're making them so realistic that you're like, I can't sense. The way you can have empathy for an animal is by their body language. But even then, it's quite difficult. And so people are probably going to come to my flat with a pitchfork and hate me for saying this because they're probably like, Mike Remick was amazing.
Burn the witch. No, they won't. But I find that...
Do you see what I mean, though?
Yeah, because I was going to say, with that as well, I can imagine it being, one, really hard to actually animate a lion's face looking sad, like a CGI lion's face
looking
sad.
Yeah, I can imagine that was the most difficult job.
Because you look at it and go, they don't do that.
They don't really do that.
Yeah, they don't have a human emotion whenever they're just like chilling or happy or they angry. Don't. Talking about 3D animation, do you think that CGI and 3D is slowly taking over more so? Or do you reckon now it's going to eventually come to a culmination of 2D animation with 3D animation?
I think there was a point where 3D animation became like the big thing and 2D was dying. Which is why, like, for example, The Princess and the Frog was 2D, and it was really random when it kind of came out because it was more 3D stuff around that time.
Yeah.
And then that was like the last kind of 2D thing they did in Disney. Actually. I think it was the last 2D. And then everything else is 3D. Obviously Pixar, Shrek, all that kind of came out and it kind of...
started boosting 3D
It boosted
stuff.
Up a bit because even then DreamWorks, most of their stuff is 2D. Mm. And most of my favourite stuff of DreamWorks is 2D. But then it started doing all 3D stuff like with Shrek and everything. And... but I do think eventually that will balance out and 2D will be introduced again. Like a really good example of that is Spider-Verse. Oh, the animation technique in that is just fantastic. They've really thought about how they're going to do it and how they're going to animate these characters. And also get an indication that it's a comic book. It's kind of camp in a way with the way they did the comic book.
Yeah. Isn't it?
The bangs.
Very cheesy old.
Cheesy.
Old
like they've literally made it seem like he was in a comic book, by the way, when he falls out of a frame. You see these outlines and the structure of a comic book, and it's really clever. And they also added the mix between 2D and 3D by animating it 3D, but then keeping the... or drawing over each frame with dark lines to make it look like it's sort of drawn.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So it's mainly 3D, but it has 2D elements to make it look a bit more 2D. Actually, a really interesting fact about Spider-Verse. In animation, there's this thing called animating on ones and animating in twos.
Mm.
Do you know what that means?
No idea.
So there's 24 frames in a second. So there's 24 drawings in a second of animation. That's when it's in ones. So you draw each drawing separate. So one drawing for the first frame, another drawing for the second frame. Animating in twos is halving that work.
Okay.
So, and a lot of early Disney did, like Snow White... Little Mermaid, I think Little Mermaid did it, was all animated in twos. So it's 12 drawings and 24. It might change a little bit. Sometimes you'll probably add an extra drawing if it needed that kind of clear...
to be more of a
but
smooth
if
motion.
If you really look, it doesn't seem it, but when you really look at old animation, it's a tiny bit jolty. Because it's having that kind of... it's not having as many drawings in between.
Mm.
What they did, though, with Spider-Verse is that they animated Spider-Man... in that to be in one, so he's really slick. A really good example of this is when he's on this web.
Mm.
So he's like going from building to building, it's really the trees. And when they animated Miles Morales, they animated him in twos.
So he's a bit
so
more
he
choppy.
Was jolty.
Yeah.
And then they start animating him in ones when he was swinging, he was getting the hang of it at the same time as Spider-Man. So and then they start animating him in ones.
Yeah.
So it's that is such an interesting thing to do. Like not many
people would clock onto it.
Not many people clock onto it. I remember I heard this because someone spoke about it on a YouTube video. But I remember noticing it, but not knowing why, in the cinema, being like, he just seems so jolty. But then now he's smoother. So, and I knew why they did it, but I didn't know it was the fact that they animated him in twos.
Yeah. Well, it's always an interesting thing as well, because that in itself is character development without needing to show character development.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
they
really thought that point.
About character development really well in that. Just in the way he was animated was an indication of how his character's growing. It's just a genius way to do it, and I love that. And having different styles in it too, like with the other animated Spider-Mans in it, there's like an anime version of Spider-Man.
Peter Porker.
Was with John Mulaney, which is brilliant.
Spider-Noir, which is Nicolas Cage.
Yes, Nicolas Cage, yes, he was brilliant. I loved him in that.
That's great. I love that as well, because one of my favourite interpretations of Spider-Man was the old Spider-Man cartoon, and they kind of brought that around with it, because there's a section where it's all parallel universes and then you have to combine together, and I just love seeing every Spider-Man together. It's something very rewarding because you get to see every different incarnation and different style of it, and it's just it's very well
done. It's so good. If you haven't seen Spider-Verse, please watch it. It's actually, it blew me away in the cinema. It's got to the point where a lot of animators who have been in the business for years, absolute years, since like when they're still doing 2D in like the 80s, and they haven't felt that excitement for an animation in a while until they saw Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
They had that excitement in the beginning, and obviously when 3D came out, that was really exciting, but they haven't had that since, for probably like 20, 30 years maybe. And then they saw Spider-Verse and they had that excitement when they were watching it. Because it was so different. It really incorporated so many different styles and different moods, different colours, different structures of a story, and still making really good characters at the same time, making people really like understand Miles Morales as a character, understand Spider-Man as a character, Peter Parker, understand Miles' dad, and understand the struggles he was going through.
His uncle being the villain.
Which is really interesting. It's a really good film, and it deserved all the awards it got.
Yeah, definitely.
Completely. I think I cried after. Oh, shit.
Oh, bless you.
Because I was just like, that was so good. Like, not because I was sad.
Just because it was...
Just because it was so good, and I was just, like, overwhelmed with what I saw, because artistically, it was just stunning.
Yeah. The only thing I've, felt like that otherwise for a film like that was the Lego Movie, the first one.
Oh, the Lego Movie was... Lego Movie was so good. It really introduced a new sense of comedy into animation without it being over the top explicit. Obviously, because you have Family Guy and South Park and all that stuff, and it's funny, but it's not appropriate for children.
Yeah.
Lego Movie was completely the right amount of funny that both adults and kids would laugh out loud at completely. And I haven't seen a film that's done that really well since Shrek.
Yeah.
The first two. We don't talk about 3 and 4.
Never talk about 3 and 4.
No, don't. In this podcast, we don't talk about sequels.
Yeah.
And this is really necessary.
Or they're not just they're not just cash grabs.
Yes.
That's the main thing.
Cash grabs.
Yeah. Oof. There's a lot of bad things.
I was saying this to you, literally.
You told me about it with Toy Story.
It felt like a cash grab, the fourth one. Because the third one, I thought, we don't really need a third one. But the third one was enjoyable because it was very nostalgic for the people going to... Because Andy's age really correlates to the age of the people who watched it when it came out.
Yes.
Like, when we went to uni, Andy went to uni. So it was really nostalgic to watch, and it was really lovely timing.
Mm.
And you got to put that to bed, that story to bed, and you felt really, like, kind of bittersweet about your past. And then they just brought out another one, and you're like, I just said goodbye to these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. And they brought it out with your favourite character, Forky, who everybody loves. Everybody loves Forky.
I mean... Forky as a character is so interesting. It's got this kind of complexity to it, most definitely. I'm definitely bullshitting as I'm looking at you and I'm saying this. Forky is a piece of shit, and whoever created that character should be ashamed.
I was going to say as well, he now, because my friend said to me, he's a character that's definitely going to get a film at some point, but... They've given him miniseries on Disney Plus. Forky asks a question. The character you always wanted to see.
I guess the kids responded to him though, and they liked him. Then it's like Olaf. Like, a lot of people, adults hate him, but kids really respond to him. So
yeah.
You the other day said something very interesting that I don't think I've had anyone really say, is that you did not like Peter Pan.
No, I hate it.
Yeah, I hate it.
It's just.
Oh, Helen's gonna be really cringing at this one.
Helen. Watch it again and don't tell me that there's no misogyny, no racism, and no jokes on colonization of America. Because there is. And there's really weird dark lines like, let's go capture some Indians as just a casual thing. And I get it's set in a time that obviously there was a lot of racism and a lot of views like that. And also you could interpret it as kids' games, and it's that standard thing of, we're going to be pirates, we're going to be the Indians. Like
the cowboys, Indians, yeah. That sort of thing.
But, how has it been remade? I just don't understand, because I can get why people enjoyed it, but Peter Pan's a dick. Wendy's a terrible character. Like, a lot of the time, she's like, Peter, I can't go anywhere without you, but you're going to be a dick to me anyway, and I'm not going to do anything about it. And it's like, do something about it, Wendy.
Can you always talk like Wendy for the rest of your life? Because that was really cute.
Peter! Oh, Father!
Peter!
Look, you can see the ship outside. Also, that ending is so stupid. because...
You're going on a rant now. Yeah. Right. I'm sitting back, I'm letting you go.
It annoys me, because... So, the ending isn't even, like, a good, like, moral ending. Because, basically, the guy's like, oh, maybe my wife and my daughter aren't so crazy. And it's like, wow, that really...
Oh, the dad. Yeah. The dad, yeah, yeah.
It really shows the age, because he's like, oh, yeah, shut up, fucking... You're acting crazy. Like, even as a line where he's like, he says to his wife, he's like, she gets it from you. And you're like, okay, this is already really strange.
Yeah, the dad's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of just, like... underhanded misogyny that it really should be like, you can't be
definitely
like,
okay, the yeah. whole the fact that Wendy was kind of brought to their land to be a mum, wasn't isn't that like the kind of reasoning Peter kind of yeah. he kind of liked her obviously, but then he also felt an attraction to her because she was a caregiver.
Yeah,
it just shows his character. He is literally just he's obviously stuck as a child obviously, but
yeah,
he doesn't want to grow up. He has no intention of growing up. He's attracted to people to be in his life if they're going to give him care.
Because
Tinkerbell's a bit like that too. Like, she gives him care. She protects him. And the only women in his life are the ones that are going to do shit for him.
Yeah.
And the boys in his life are the ones that give him fun and that he has fun and he feels in charge of them. Like, that is literally Peter Pan's character. He's actually just awful.
He's awful.
Awful man.
There's a section with you saying about Tinkerbell. Like, one Tinkerbell... She's probably the best character in it, but she's also kind of a dick as well because she tries to kill Wendy on multiple occasions. But
that's funny though.
There's also just the section where after everything's gone wrong, Peter's about to get blown up, which I find really funny because I counted. Says like, when the clock hits six, you'll get a special surprise. Hook says, and he's just like standing there like, Tink, what are you doing here? I'm about to open this present right now. That's totally gone over the time limit thing. It's gonna explode. But then, she gets crushed, and finally you get a little bit of Peter being like, Tink, you're the only thing I care about.
Mm.
And that's about it. There's nothing else. And it's like...
Yeah.
She's done for you thick and thin, man. Like...
She's done everything for you.
Yeah. She literally helps you fly, and helps everyone else fly. And you still just treat her like shit. That's what I don't get. Because he obviously has a bit of that attitude to girls anyway, because he is a kid. But... He lives on an island with mermaids, with pixies. It's like, you haven't treated anyone with respect. You haven't gone, you're quite nice. I'm not going to be a dick to you and be like bare sexist to you.
I think it's because we're watching this as adults. Like, as kids, Peter Pan's like a role model. And I kind of don't really get why. Now we watch it now, so why was he a role model? Who's kind of not that very nice.
Mm.
But the whole idea is that he hasn't grown up and he's... not understanding responsibility, he's not understanding the time to be serious, he's not understanding the matter of life and death is really serious and you shouldn't just play around with it, with people's lives like that. And it's interesting because I think this side of Peter Pan in retellings, Peter Pan's been retold in so many different ways. There's Hook,
which is the best one.
Which is, I think it's the best retelling because it really deconstructs the structure of Peter Pan and changes your opinion of it while still making Hook quite a scary villain and Peter Pan being quite childish still.
Mm.
But because older Peter in it, Robin Williams is like, why? Yeah, you get what I mean.
It has the better ending theme as well with it actually being like, it's okay to be a kid.
Yeah, that kind of like, it's okay to remember who you are and sometimes who you are is that kind of childlike element in you.
Yeah, it's more clear cut.
In example, Once Upon a Time, Peter Pan is a villain in that.
Mm.
He's, I think for a whole season, he's a villain in that. And... that must have come from something. That's not just, oh, we're going to change this completely. We're just going to completely 360 it.
Yeah.
Peter Pan has not very nice elements about him. He literally kidnaps children.
Yeah.
He grooms children into probably staying there forever to be a lost boy. A lost boy.
Yeah.
A boy that is lost and has no home. He wants people to be that. And then you're sitting there thinking, why are we not meant to like Hook again? I think he just wants treasure, that's it. Like...
yeah, that's the thing. He doesn't even want anything bad. Like, I like as well.
He just wants treasure and Peter Pan's in the way. Like, he's not going to use it for anything.
Pretty much. Also, like, Hook does have this obsession with wanting to hunt Peter Pan. But it mainly starts because he lost his hand to the crocodile that Peter Pan fed it to. And what I find really interesting, I actually like Hook as a villain because I think... I like the whole PTSD thing with the crocodile. Every time he hears the ticking, he starts freaking out. He's like, Spee! But I love there's a section where he finally gets rid of Peter Pan and he takes his hat off and he goes, I bid adieu to a very fitting villain. And I was like, he actually has respect. Yeah. Peter Pan is just a douche.
That's the thing, like, you, it's showing that it's definitely, like, a story for kids to be like, adults are bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids are cool.
That's definitely...
Do you know what? You want to skateboard in someone's front yard? You do it.
Exactly.
When you really think about it, it's like... All Hook wanted was just to get some treasure.
Yeah, exactly. He probably wasn't even trying to hurt anyone until...
Yeah, until he peed back on the way and cut off his arm.
But, I remember you told me an interesting fact about Peter Pan, about Tinkerbell being animated by a live-action thing, but also it wasn't cast as the correct character. Like, it was modelled after Marilyn Monroe?
Yeah, so Tinkerbell was modelled after Marilyn Monroe, but... they got another actress to actually act out the scenes with the large objects. I think her name was Margaret Kerry. So she was an actress and a radio host of the time.
Okay.
So if you just Google Margaret Kerry Tinkerbell, it comes up with these really fascinating images of her playing Tinkerbell on these massive sets. Mm. So the bit when she gets stuck in the keyhole, they made a big hole for her to crawl into so they can film her struggling to get out of it. So the animators had a reference for her.
Mm.
So, because I think it's hard, you can get reference for everything, but having something like a fairy interacting with a normal sized object, but it's big compared to her, you can't really get that from doing that in your living room.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So they had to construct these sets for her to play, for this actress to play on, and they filmed it and they took photos of it and they had sketched it while they were there. It was really interesting. They did this for a lot of films, actually, after.
They did it for Hercules, I know that, with the gospel singers who actually introduce every song and
keep the narration going.
They actually had live adaptations doing the songs and then they animated for that. But do you know when that actually came around? Like, do you know the year it came around or the era it came around?
What, when they started to use actors?
Live actions. Enough.
Ooh.
Testing you.
I know they did it for Snow White.
Oh, you're getting close. You're getting close to that era.
Fantasia? No, that's after. Oh, I know it's not Snow White, but
it's around that era. It's
around that era. What was it for?
So it was for in the 1920s to 1940s, Disney were one of the biggest animation studios.
Yeah.
But there was also Fleischer Studios, who introduced a load of new technology, like rotoscoping.
Rotoscoping's used.
The live action and tracking.
Basically
and
tracing it. Yeah.
But Disney actually adopted that, which then caused a feud between. Flash Studios and Disney Studios.
Oh, okay.
Which is why they have this, like, really elaborate beef, basically, where Flash Studios would do, like, a lot of shady stuff, as well as Disney, because Disney would, like, bury them under all their publicity and stuff like that and try and hide, basically, Flash Studios. Like, Disney claimed to make the first sound cartoon 4 years after Flash Studios had done it. And they were telling all the presses to do that as well.
Oh, man, I had no idea about this.
It's really sad.
What an interesting fact.
Because Flash Studios is the guy that created Popeye.
Betty Boop.
Yep. The first cartoon version of Superman as well.
Yes.
They've done a lot of stuff.
I know studios, you just don't really hear about them a lot.
Yeah. And this problem is...
So did they just run them to the ground, like Disney?
Well, there's, like, a lot of different little things that came into it, which I found out quite recently, because the theory is that Disney basically did that because they, like, Walt Disney is a marketing genius, like, he knew how to sell his product. But then you also there was difficulties with him and his brother, because they were both the owners of the studio, and they don't even talk anymore. Like, from 1939, they completely cut communication from each other.
Whoa, I love gossip in the animation world. Isn't it just so funny? Like, we make cartoons, but there's beef.
Yeah.
It's like, it's sort of funny, like, underground sexiness about it. Like, it's like there was this beef in between these studios when really the product they're making is for kids. I just find it so fascinating. Yeah.
Well, I find it interesting as well, because Flash Studios, they did a lot more of a darker style of animation.
Like, really dark.
A lot of it apparently is about, I haven't seen any of it, so don't hold me to it, but a lot of it is apparently based on cults and sex and loads of weird stuff.
Yeah, well, Betty Boop as a character is a tame version of what they've kind of done. I've seen a few, and when I was doing my masters, we watched a few of the studio's work, actually, and it's all very
weird.
Strange, black and white, weird. There's actually a version of like an animation based on this style about climate change and about the world, the humans destroying the world. It did its rounds on Facebook for a long time. Have you seen it?
I think I've seen
it. It's a similar style. They've based it a lot on that style of the black and white style.
Definitely get that. Yeah,
and it's kind of got the old-fashioned like Mickey Mouse style in it, but as well, tiny bit. Really good animation piece actually. But it creeps me out. That baby kind of
kind of ear. It is a little weird.
It's weird, yeah.
But I really liked what they did because they're basically both antagonizing each other afterwards.
Yeah.
Because Fleischer Studios would steal Disney employees to work for them.
Yes, guessing. That's at Starbucks stealing like Costa employees, isn't it?
Basically, it's like, hey, you're not enjoying it over there. Come here.
Come here.
We've got cookies.
We've got better cookies. And we'll flavour some coffee.
But what was the other thing? Later on, Fleischer started including a little cartoon mouse as an antagonist as another little subtle rip on Disney. But there was also...
Disney, you gonna take that shit?
Exactly, bitches. The sad thing about it was, since there were so many things that went wrong, you don't really know how they disappeared, but also they signed a Paramount deal for their distribution. Paramount basically screwed them out of it. They let go of one of the brothers first, and then they were you need to resign to the other brother, who was the main creator of Betty Boop and Popeye.
Oh my god, I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's really sad.
What an interesting fact.
And it's also even... this is a really sad story, but there's even like an extra little bit, which is Walt Disney was actually inspired by those guys as well, and for them to be his biggest rival, it must have been painful to that degree.
Yeah, my god.
Yeah, it's.
To be honest, Disney is ruthless.
Yeah.
They're ruthless.
They seem
nice. They're ruthless, man.
What's your favorite quirky side character, like funny side character, like Gaston? Like Timon and Pumbaa and stuff like that.
Ooh.
So I do love what is his name? It's not Gaston.
LeFou?
Yeah. I do love him. Gaston, you got to pull yourself together.
Well, do you know what? It's really interesting like how that kind of character came about. Definitely Robin Williams revolutionised the sidekick character to be voiced by comedians or comedic actors. He definitely did. So that's why, for me, the best one is Robin Williams as the genie.
I think,
because the animators were so keen on Robin Williams as a person to play his character, and they wanted the genie to be Robin Williams. They didn't get a comedy person to just voice these lines. It's the same with Eddie Murphy with Mushu, actually. They literally wanted Mushu to be Eddie Murphy in the way that he kind of says things, the way his expressions are. And how they actually, it's really interesting how they got Robin Williams to do Aladdin was they animated one of his stand-ups and as the genie, and that really convinced him to do the part, because they kept asking him and I think he kept saying no, and then they animated one of his stand-up routines as the genie, and they made him have like two heads and talk to each other
doing
and like
wacky
and because he's so quick, they did it like he was poofing here and there and like poofing, that's a word.
It is a word.
Yeah.
Things go poof.
So things go Things go poof, yeah. I said poofing and I was like, is that a word? I don't know. So I have to say Robin Williams as the genie, although there are lots.
Like Danny DeVito as Phil Octees.
Please do an impression. Do an impression.
But that's the slug of a heel of his. Hopefully, yeah. People are crazy out here. Hey, I'm walking here.
I love him. Danny DeVito as what's his name?
Philoctetes. Yeah, he's so good. And he has such a good song.
And that's another character where they literally designed the character to be like, that is Danny DeVito. When you look at Phil, it's Danny DeVito. He's short. He's a bit rounder. His face is literally like.
I think as well, if they remade it, they'd have to have Danny DeVito.
I think actually, they've already kind of spoken about a live cast for it. I think Danny DeVito is doing it. I think.
Woods?
No. Actually, that will be Jeff Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum as Hades.
That could be interesting. I can see him doing Hades.
I can see him doing it. I think he'll do it in his own way.
Yeah, he'll do it in his... Well, if you've seen Thor Ragnarok, I reckon he'll be a bit like that. Like,
I think he will be really like... Yeah. Basically, Jeff Goldblum plays himself.
Yeah.
So, Jeff Goldblum as Hades being Jeff Goldblum. Imagine if Hades was real and it was Jeff Goldblum. We'd be like, that's how he's going to play it. Like, mm-hmm. And I think it works. I think he does it. He will do his own... It's kind of like with... Will Smith playing the genie in the live action.
Yeah.
I think he did a great job because he wasn't trying to be Robin Williams. He did his own version of it and it really worked.
Yeah.
As his own version of genie being a bit sassy and a bit like, hang on a minute. Like,
I get that.
And I think it really worked well. So I feel like Jeff Goldblum doing the same thing as Hades, doing it his own way, I think it'll work.
I was going to say, I'd be interested to see, because he can definitely smash the cool, suave Hades when he's just like talking normally, he's chill. But I want to see him do the anger and the intensity.
Cause... See, I've never seen Jeff Goldblum play angry. I've never seen it.
I don't feel like he suits angry as well. I feel like if I saw him angry, I'd be a bit like... I probably wouldn't take him as seriously as I would.
I think they're gonna approach it a little differently.
Yeah, probably.
Apparently, this is rumoured. I think... I'm not sure if it's true. Rumoured. Pain and Panic will be played by Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah.
Which I think would be sick. That'd be a nice little partnership.
That'd be perfect.
And I think that accents will just add to it if it's an American cast and just have these British, like, shit people.
Yeah. It's pretty shit.
They're not shit at all, but.
Fucking communists.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're just going to be like, mate, what? Cornetto, yeah. I don't know.
Well, they already have that best friend dynamic already.
They really do, definitely.
And I'm definitely guessing. Nick Frost's got to be Pain, and Simon Pegg's got to be Panic, because they're so fit perfectly.
So should we wrap this up?
Yeah.
Yeah? Let's do it. Cool. What are your recommendations then for an animation film?
I'm going to say one, but it's not even for the entirety of the film. It's literally the first 3 minutes of Up, because that montage.
Oh.
Best montage.
Trying to make the audience cry.
You should cry. If you don't cry at that montage, you are a monster.
You are officially going to hell. As someone that loves animation, I have so many recommendations. So I'm really trying to narrow it down. Obviously, everything we've said in this podcast, everything we've mentioned, except Peter Pan. And if you really like Treasure Planet, I really recommend watching Atlantis. It's got a very similar kind of vibe to it, and it's about an adventure, and the art is absolutely stunning. And if you really want to cry, Fox and the Hound. It's got to be it.
Fox and the Hound is a beaut. Is a beauty.
We'll probably end up doing another episode on animation down the line, because there's so much we can talk about. Studio Ghibli, yeah. We didn't even touch on Studio Ghibli.
Oh yeah, and I'm
gonna... any anime or...
That Alice needs to watch, because I'm not anime.
I don't watch... Surprisingly, I don't watch a lot of anime, so that'll be interesting. I think it'll be good to have a little Alice Reviews section of me just talking about anime.
I'm basically going to make you break down fight scenes. So I'll be like, how was that done? How was the animation?
How can I do that?
I want to be an anime.
We've been very good at it, Brian. Like, mate.
You're the best.
Thank you. Anyway, so hope you enjoyed the podcast. We did. We definitely enjoyed talking about all the lovely animation. And except Peter Pan.
Except Peter Pan. If you take anything from this for good... Which is Treasure Planet.
Yeah.
And Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
Better than average is Up for me.
Yeah.
And the bad, Peter Pan. Don't remake it.
Just don't.
Stop it. It's done.
It's done.